Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Continue readings from Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th Canto, Chapter 19, Text Number 3. Basta eko vanekaschid. Vichinvam priyamatmanaha Dadarsha kupe patitam Svakarma vashagam ajam Vastayeko vanekaschin Vichinvam priyamatmanaha Dadarsha kupe patitam Svakarma vashagamajam Pastayeko vanekaschi Vichinvan priyam atmanaha Dadarsha kupe patitam Svakarma vashagamajam
Thank you.
Svastha Gaut Eka One Vane In a forest Kaschid Some Vichinvan Searching for food Priyam Very dear Atmanaha For himself Didarsha Saw by chance Kupe Within a well Patitam Fallen Swakarma Vashagam Under the influence of the results of fruitive activities Ajam A she-goat. Translation purported by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, while wandering in the forest, eating to satisfy his senses, a he-goat by chance approached a well in which he saw a she-goat standing helplessly, having fallen into it by the influence of the results of fruitive activities. Report. Here Maharaj Yayati compares himself to a he-goat and Devayani to a she-goat and describes the nature of man and woman. Like a he-goat, a man searches for sense gratification, wandering here and there, and a woman without the shelter of a man or husband is like a she-goat that has fallen into a well. Without being cared for by a man, a woman cannot be happy. Indeed, she is just like a she-goat that has fallen into a well and is struggling for existence. Therefore, a woman must take shelter of her father, as Devayani did when under the care of Shukracharya, and then the father must give the daughter in charity to a suitable man, or a suitable man should help the woman by placing her under the care of a husband. This is shown vividly by the life of Devayani. When King Ayati delivered Devayani from the well, she felt great relief and requested Yayati to accept her as his wife. But when Maharaj Yayati accepted Devayani, he became too attached and had sex life not only with her but with others like Sharmishta. Yet still he was dissatisfied. Therefore, one should retire by force from such family life as Yayati's. When one is fully convinced of the degrading nature of worldly family life, one should completely renounce this way of life, take sannyas, and engage himself fully in the service of the Lord. Then one's life will be successful. Translation repeated. While wandering in the forest, eating to satisfy his senses, a he-goat by chance approached a well in which he saw a she-goat standing helplessly, having fallen into it by the influence of the results a fruit of activities. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadhamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanan Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Let's read this translation again. It's the beginning part of King Yayati Maharaj's story. While wandering in the forest, eating to satisfy his senses, a he-goat by chance approached a well in which he saw a she-goat standing helplessly, having fallen into it by the influence of the result of fruitive activities. So here we have the beautiful and very deep, very profound story that some of us may have read already, some may be hearing for the first time. This is describing, it is a parable or an analogy, a symbolic story, in which the very seemingly refined and pinnacle of human life and civilization is compared to an incident between two goats. So this story, as we will hear, it describes the various activities and life of King Yayati, his meeting with his wife, and the drama that ensued with the girlfriends of his wife and the relationships that they had. All of these different pastimes now are being summarized as the activities of two goats. And Prabhupada has taken the opportunity in the purport to highlight how the perils of material existence and material life are represented here in this story. So it's helpful also when we take a look at the Sanskrit of any of the verses. The first word is basta, which means a goat. In the forest, he was searching for food. Here it says, while wandering in the forest, eating to satisfy his senses, priyamatmana, for himself. He was satisfying his own self. Didarsha, by chance, within a well, he saw a fallen she-goat who was there under the influence of the results of fruitive activities. So the one aspect we can get from this is that all living entities are wandering throughout this material world by the result of their various fruitive activities. And some are going into higher situations, some are going into lower situations. Whatever particular body, mind, and senses that we have is actually our own doing. Sometimes we feel that we've been wronged, or we feel a sense of difficulty accepting our particular lot in life. But the devotee learns to turn his consciousness inward and see that actually Krishna is giving what I deserve and what I desire. I can't hold any ill will towards the Supreme Controller. There will certainly be challenges and difficulties in life, but a devotee, actually, he's the most tolerant. This is one of the 26 qualities of a devotee, because he sees that Krishna has the supreme will. He is the supreme control. He has a supreme plan in all activities of life. And therefore, whatever situation that I find myself in, because I'm practicing devotional service, the devotee focuses on the positive. He focuses on the opportunity, seeing that everything in life actually is simply an opportunity for me to go deeper in my own spiritual cultivation. And that actually Krishna, as a loving father, is the most kind. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam. Out of all the living entities, the one is providing for all the others. So Krishna is actually, out of compassion, he's providing us what we desire, what we want, and what we deserve. That is his compassion, actually. The conditioned souls were not actually so worthy of all of these gifts. We've willingly turned away from God. So we find ourselves in this material world. And therefore we have to go through these various influences of the results of our own karmas, wandering sometimes higher, sometimes lower. But Krishna never forgets us, even though we have willed or desired to turn away from him. Every opportunity in the material world is the opportunity to turn back again. Every moment, every day, every opportunity we have. So, this is a very powerful allegorical story as one goes through. And here's how all of these different activities that the king was doing in the material realm, they are in one sense compared simply to the activities of animals. Look at a few points in the purport here. It says, like a he-goat, a man searches for sense gratification, wandering here and there. A woman without the shelter of her husband is like a she-goat that has fallen into a well. So this is a description of the general activities we find in the material world. Being encased and separated from Krishna, being covered by these gross and subtle bodies, our original love, our attachment, and our service directed to Krishna is being misdirected and misappropriated to so many temporary, illusory, false things in this world. And therefore, the whole paradigm of life simply means how to add on to an illusion of my identity, how to enhance my false ego, my conception of life, which is based on illusion. That is the real quest of material existence. And whether one is man or woman, it takes different shapes and forms, but that original pure love that the soul has for Krishna becomes misdirected. It becomes lust, kama. Prema becomes kama, and this is the difference between iron and gold. Gold means the soul is able to repose its loving propensity fully at the lotus feet of Krishna. And kama, or lust, means the exact perverted reflection. Rather than putting all of our energy, all our life breath into trying to please Krishna, we use that to egoistically satisfy our own senses, which is the epitome of futility. I remember when I first read this, this pastime, it was quite a profound, actually, revelation or experience. If one very attentively and submissively hears this incident, then immediate sense of detachment and renunciation awakens in the heart. It's such a beautiful description, actually, because King Ayati, he was the ruler of the entire world, as far as I understand. He was a great king, and he had actually conquered the world. He was enjoying for thousands of years such a high esteem position in this material world. He'd achieved the pinnacle of progress. We're all looking for that high position in life, and he had actually gotten to that. So in one sense, that is worshipful. He's a devotee. So although under the influence of different desires, ultimately it's stated that he was serving Krishna throughout all of this. So King Yayati had conquered the world, he had his kingdom, and now, after having enjoyed for so long, he's finding that his senses were not giving him any rest. Sometimes the acharyas pray like this: I've served these wicked masters, lust, greed, anger, for so long, they've not given me any release, any refuge. So we're all this victim, these lower influences of the modes of nature, lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, and envy. These are offensive states of consciousness that arise out of illusion that drag the soul downward. Trividam narakasidam dvaram nashanam atmanam kama krodha tata lobhas tasmadeta tyajantrayam. These are the three gates leading to hell: lust, kama, anger, krodha, and lobha, greed. So when the pure soul, which doesn't require anything extraneous to itself, becomes victim of an illusory state of consciousness, so I'm self-satisfied, but I need to get some satisfaction from something outside of myself. I'm fully peaceful, but I become angry over some material situation. Or all I need is my relationship with Krishna, but I become lustful for something else. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, these are the gates to hell. Every sane man should give them up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. So, although a devotee, King Ayati, we see he became victim of material pleasures, sense gratification. And by that he became so entangled in this illusory existence of the material world. So here, after having enjoyed for so long and still not finding any satisfaction, he's relating this story actually to his wife, who was the primary object of his attachment. I apologize, but I like hearing these verses again and again. While wandering in the forest, eating to satisfy his senses, a he-goat by chance approached a well in which he saw a she-goat standing helplessly, having fallen into it by the influence of the results of fruitive activities. So it's putting all of that, as we mentioned, that aspiration that we all carry. We all have this big aspiration in life to, what does success look like to us? What does it mean to be, have made it? The problem is that all of our consciousness is directed into the realm of asat, that which is not reality. Asatoma sadgama. Give up this illusory realm, go to the light. So until we come to the Brahma Bhuta, or that platform where we're not identifying with our mind and body, all of our energy, it becomes directed into a realm which has no eternal existence. Therefore, the injunction of the Srimad Bhagavatam is Param Satyam Dhimahi. Don't meditate on the Asat Dham. This is the Devi Dham, Maya's, the realm of impermanence. But actually, one has to meditate on the Param Satyam, that Dham or that realm which is not, it's never distinguished, it's never diminished by time. It is eternally existing. That is the abode of Sri Narayan, Lord Vishnu. Om Tad Paramam Vishnu. What is that? Om Tad Paramam Padam Vishnu. The supreme abode, actually, that's the kingdom of God. And Krishna is eternally existing there in so many varieties of forms and qualities. That is the real attraction for the conditioned soul. Unless we give a chance to actually hear about that realm of Sat, then we can never give up the lower taste. The lower taste will predominate. The taste of sense gratification, either gross or subtle, those are the chains that are keeping us here. So King Ayati, he's had this moment, says that he gave it up in just one moment. Finally, his senses were never fully satisfied. They were never satiated. It's a lesson because we have to purify our intelligence. The intelligence is the cause of bondage. Therefore, Krishna instructs you have to act in Buddhi Yoga. When you purify your intelligence through hearing and studying, and absorbing ourselves in the Bhagavatam, then our intelligence awakens. Divya Gyan. Divya Gyan Sride Prokashito. By the grace of the spiritual master, enlightenment or an awakening happens. That's what happened to King Ayati. We can go in our routine so long, but when we get a particle of mercy, then suddenly we're able to change a habit that we may have been carrying for millions of years or lifetimes, here 1,000 years. And finally that awakening happens. We hear that also later in the Bhagavatam, the story of Pingala. So that is considered the first step to shut out the prospect of lasting happiness in the material world. That is the preliminary point of spiritual life. Brahmabhuta prasanatmana shochatina kangshati. As long as we are invested in this material realm, looking to gratify the body or the mind, then our ability to really direct our love, our prema to Krishna, is hampered. So now King Ayati, he's had that awakening, he's had that realization, and now out of compassion, he's telling his wife this beautiful story. He's saying, this he-goat, he happened to approach a well. So it's very humbling, actually. It's taking all of whatever we think we're doing or we're so expert and good at, he's bringing it actually down a big notch. What is We were just acting like animals. Why? Because we were missing the real goal of life, the real goal of self-realization. So that is what we hope to gain by hearing this pastime in the next few days. That sense of awakening of detachment from the material world, which opens the door of liberation. Mahat Sevam Dwaram Ahorvi Muktis. So that comes by association of sadhus. And Srila Prabhupada further goes on. He explains that still he was dissatisfied, no matter how much material sense gratification. Therefore, one should retire by force from such family life as Yayati's. And was fully convinced of the degrading nature of worldly family life, one should completely renounce this way of life, take sannyasa, and engage himself fully in the service of the Lord. Then one's life will be successful. So here Prabhupada mentioned this also, that what is in the Bhagavad Gita, what is the highest perfection of knowledge, or the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness? He says renunciation of the material concept of life. So that Prabhupada is indicating here, when one is fully convinced the degrading nature of worldly family life, all of the relationships, Prabhupada mentions again and again, all of the relationships that we have here, they're actually perverted relationships that are existing in the spiritual world. So on the one hand, it seems like a kind of pessimistic view. Why do we condemn so much material life or the existence? Isn't that too... No, but that is part of the Bhagavad presentation. So many of these stories are providing that aspect, because unless that is removed, then the attraction cannot fully awaken to the higher topic, the higher taste here in Krishna's pastimes. Otherwise, therefore, why the first 9 cantos that teach us those lessons spiritual life before, so we can actually value when we come to the 10th canto? Otherwise, we can hear Krishna's pastime and say, that's nice, but I have some important urgent business I have to attend to. So Prabhupada says, one should renounce this way of life, engage himself fully in the service of the Lord, then one's life will be successful. So again, that is the real platform of success. The success in the material world is simply phantasmagoria. What does it know? The real success just means to develop humility, understand our insignificance, and try to, however we can, even though we're incapable, we don't have much qualification, we don't have much ability, we don't have much to offer Krishna. In that humble offering, someone offering patram pushpam to Krishna, that is a much greater success than any huge achievement in the material world, like we're hearing a great kingdom. Just a simple, Krishna says, if you offer that with love, that is the real success in life. So these are just a few contemplations I had. I'm sorry my thoughts were not so well organized today, but we can keep going into this a little more, but I'll just see if there's any questions or discussion on that point for now.
My thought goes to hearing about the worldly material life or family life. There's like a tendency then to just like throw out the idea of like devotional family life. So I find it interesting that people and devotees can be within family life. They hear these stories and they're also detached, but they're mm-hmm. still in it. Mm-hmm. As hearing in a purport that sannyas means to engage all the time in devotional service. So if anyone who is doing that is a sannyasi, mm-hmm. isn't fully renounced. So Just my thought is that, like, I think it's profound how devotional service overcomes all of this, and anyone in any circumstance can be renounced or detached, even while still being in the situation of family life. So just a thought.
That's definitely there. But the point is, and as Subal was mentioning yesterday, is that they have that vigyan. They've seen through the illusion that material family life will give them happiness. The real happiness they're finding is in bhakti. So it becomes the means for becoming detached from it. But Prabhupada emphasizes again here that actually one has to renounce that, even happy household or family life. Prabhupada is saying to get that full dedication in the service of the Lord to make one's life successful. But why is Prabhupada emphasizing again and again that at the age of 50, one must leave that household or life? That is a recurring theme throughout Prabhupada's books. And that is the Varnashram system. So even though one can execute bhakti while in the grihastha ashram, for this highest thing, it's recommended actually that one take vanaprastha, so they can dedicate themselves even more. So we see examples on both sides. There are those, certainly in the Bhagavatam, we hear a lot of great kings, and a lot of great kings who were pure devotees. But again, at the end of their life, generally we see they all give up their kingdom and they go to the north, or because those entanglements, those attachments are so deep that even in the midst of one's doing one devotional service, how can one give up that? That's the main cause. It's difficult because our real problem in the material world is misplaced attachment, right? The jivas, they're part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna is all attractive. So naturally the soul is beautiful. The soul is amazing. One wants to have an affectionate relationship. I want to reciprocate with someone. I want to have that love with another living entity. So the problem is that when that pure heart of the soul is not fully in love with Krishna, then we're directing that prema of the soul, that love of the soul, to one of Krishna's parts and parcels. That's okay, but the real place for that has to be in Krishna alone. That when one fully loves Krishna, automatically that love for others is there. But it's just it's an interesting recollection I have, that why are we bound in this material? Misplaced affection. If you look at so many people in the material world, or even families, I'm attached to this person. I really like this. That's great. That's Krishna's part and parcel. But to the degree that that attachment is preventing me from fully surrendering to Krishna and taking Krishna as my Lord and Master, Krishna is the real husband, Krishna is the real friend, that very thing that's okay, it's nice, but it ends up in the ultimate, the highest, strictest sense, which what Krishna consciousness comes down to, the most refined level of love, then that very attachment, it becomes an obstacle. So therefore we hear that they're having so many thousands of queens or family members or sons, but they go so they can fully dedicate in the service of the Lord.
You mentioned in your class this parable of King Jayati on, you know, with the goats, which is quite significant because he's telling his wife their biographical story, which is obvious. It's basically you're calling yourself a goat and calling me a goat too. Mm-hmm. And the the chosen of the animal also is like, because the goat is a little sort of insignificant, is, you know, it's a skinny, small creature. It's not a cow, mm-hmm. you know, it's not a horse, it's not an elephant, you know. It's not a dog, it's better than a dog. But the goat is sort of silly, you know, and not very, in, you know, they sort of have some intelligence, but, and he's comparing himself to a goat and comparing his wife to a goat. And Prabhupada elaborates in the purport about, you know, the nature of what the goat business is. And so it's significant that he used this analogy of being a goat in terms of pursuing this material happiness. That, you know, he's saying, you know, I'm as silly as a goat, basically. Mm-hmm. We were as silly as goats by doing this business. So he's making a strong point with that. Mm-hmm. Just a comment. Mm-hmm.
I remember Prabhupada gave an example somewhere, in purport somewhere, according to several proofs, that, you know, goat, you know, the goat, what they do, they are so foolish that when you can see one goat is going to die, you know, the butcher is killing one goat in front of other goats, still, they don't know, it will be my turn, I will be dead next moment. But they are keep on eating some, you know, grass or something, some leaf things. They ignore that one of his associate has been killed and he is going to be dead. And this is another analogy also Prabhupada gave. That is, you know, do you remember that there is a something like false, something like underneath of goat's neck.
Yeah, he has nipples on
yeah,
the neck.
Yeah, that is what, how that means, you know, police people, they get bewildered, you know, I think. You know, some milk is there, the thing like that. But yeah, another point we will see. So in this purport, there it has been told, like, you know, you have to give up family life by hook or crook at age of 50. You are forced to do. Means you will be forced to do. That I remember my Guru Maharaj was telling one time, you know, either you live today or you have to live tomorrow. At the time of death, you are forced to die. You are forced to leave your all belongings, all your relatives, all your kith and kin. But why not before that stage come? Why don't you leave it voluntarily? Mm. At least you'll get some peace and happiness. So that is a good injection. That is so at age of 50 or something, we have to be forced to leave the family life.
Some thoughts. I don't know if there's some time.
No, we have time.
One is like, we don't see people taking vanaprasth, but in America, how do you take vanaprasth? Like, you come into the temple after, you know, you're a mature devotee, and then maybe you just take up some menial service, or like join the brahmacharya ashram again or something like that. Like, takes the whole varnashram system to give facility for vanaprasth and sannyas. Like, I would envision if we could establish simple agrarian villages, then people could easily take vanaprasth. They could live, if we had plenty of food supplies going out, and the whole mode of goodness atmosphere, and provide that atmosphere for devotees to at large enter into deep sadhana
in the vanaprastha stage. Otherwise, I mean, maybe you can go to Vrindavan, Mayapur. I'm not so sure what the facility is there to take vanaprastha and later sannyas, but it seems like, practically speaking, we have to implement, like what Srila Prabhupada's vision is the whole varnashram system, this farm community. And also, one thing, I'm wondering about the statement that in Kali Yuga, that it's forbidden to take sannyas. Mm. So we see that people, our acharyas take sannyas, but why? Why is there the statement that you're not supposed to take sannyas in Kali Yuga?
So, the vanaprastha, we see that ashram, a lot of our senior devotees, they mentioned that ashram is one ashram that's very much missing in our society. And Prabhupada mentions traditionally one would go to the forest, but in Kali Yuga the forest is not really so much recommended. We're not so qualified just to live in a forest. So Prabhupada says one should live in a holy place like Vrindavan or Mayapur or a temple. So we see that the life of a vanaprastha means dedicating now much deeper degree, much more facility to engage in the primary angas of devotional service, living in a holy place, hearing and chanting. So Vrindavan, Prabhupada actually would emphasize again and again, I want anyone who's older, devotees, just come in. Anyone can come. That's why the Vrindavan project was so important, that anyone who's getting close to the end of their life, come to Vrindavan. That way you can make your life successful. So going to the Dham, that is a very high level of vanaprastha. That's actually beyond vanaprastha. Vanaprastha is material, but going to reside, but it fits in nicely with the progress in life. So that was a big emphasis that he gave to go. He just sit in the Dham. And ultimately one wants to develop what is the main anga of their bhakti or bhajan that they want to develop is the taste for the holy name. So that is good facility in Vrindavan and Mayapur. Chant the holy name. Get attachment. All of the different aspects of bhakti that we're doing, they're meant to facilitate attachment and deeper taste for chanting. Chanting is the means of deliverance in Kali Yuga. This is the teaching of Mahaprabhu. This is what we're chanting every morning. This is the benediction moon that's blessing. So that always has to be on the primary, even our book distribution, our different angas, they're valuable because they're helping awaken taste for chanting. By the pure chanting, one gets Krishna, Krishna consciousness, Krishna prema. So we all have a unique program of how we require that support in our nam bhajan, our nam seva, preaching activities, book distribution. Otherwise, we don't have taste right now. We have the jaundice. We have the tongue has been, although the name of Krishna is the sweetest, it's the highest thing. Like we just had this amazing kirtan, this for the Guru Puja with Prabhu. That's the highest thing, but we may not be feeling that taste, right? So we have to get the mercy of preaching, get Prabhupada's mercy to awaken our attachment for hearing and chanting. When the hearing and chanting is done offenselessly, Krishna reveals himself. So all of our devotional aspects, the problem now is we're doing the activities, but we're doing them with offenses. So we don't actually realize the potency or the magnitude, the potential that is there in anything that we do on a daily basis, just coming to Mangalarti or just hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees. All of these things, if they're done without offense, they immediately awaken pure Krishna consciousness, bhava. That's the power of what we're doing, the process that we're doing, but we haven't come to appreciate that because the material contamination is still in the mind. I'm thinking, okay, this is fine, or okay, I have to do this routine again. This is the injunction, I just have to follow. No, but actually they're so powerful, and those are all culminated in the Nam Sankirtan, which immediately can awaken one to their real position, their constitutional position. The deity worship, how much opulent deity worship is going on every day. So that is, in all of our phases of life, that's where the goal is, and the vanaprastha is a very opportune time to dedicate fully to that. That's what Prabhupada wanted. Without that, our social structure, it's incomplete, because I'm not qualified, but I can. But what senior devotees are saying, that the one remains, they're not showing that example for the future, and they remain for a long time, and that they don't get to take that highest, make that step, which helps facilitate that highest attainment. Now, in terms of these five things that are prohibited in Kali Yuga, taking sannyas, a sacrifice of a cow, a sacrifice of a horse, begetting a child in the wife of one's brother, and what's the last one? Oh, sorry, sister. I thought I said that. Anyway, yes, those are there. We see from the example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, though, he didn't exactly follow that sense of Vedic injunction, because that sannyas referred to is not the sannyas that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta instituted. What they instituted was Bhagavad Marg sannyas, or the path of preaching Krishna consciousness, using the sannyas ashram for the propagation of Krishna consciousness. So for preaching, that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took it, because he saw they're not paying me respect if I become a sannyasi. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta adopted a similar process. The smarter Brahmins, the Indian community is not respecting our Vaishnavas. They have a misconception. So by taking sannyas, it will bring their natural appreciation to Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So even though technically, or according to certain Vedic injunctions, it is not allowed for a higher purpose, actually one can even transcend normal Vedic injunctions for a higher purpose, like spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. That's what Prabhupada did. So we can think at our stage that's forbidden. But if one becomes so qualified that they're able to spread Krishna consciousness very drastically, very widely, then they may achieve the adhikar to transcend that injunction on a certain level. Is that okay? Okay, we have 2 minutes left. I'm sorry for holding everyone, but I'm going to conclude with one very nice portion here. In terms of what we're describing, the primary goal of our sadhana is, it's coming as a description from Sanatan Goswami, who's composed the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And the story of Gopakumar, a young Brahmin who achieves perfection by chanting his particular mantra. And I happened to just read over a little bit this morning. It's helpful for those chanting Gayatri to understand more deeply the significance and the purpose. There's a beautiful section just related to this last point we were talking about Nam Sankirtan. Hearing the Brahmin's pitiful words, Gopakumar thought, and this is his guru speaking, "This person has done everything he needs to do. Indeed, his life is a complete success. All that remains for him to achieve is to see directly the lotus feet of the Lord. He needs to become attached, not so much to the solitary chanting of the Lord's mantra, but to the Sankirtan of his names." So now Gopi Purana Dhana Prabhu, he paraphrases Sanatana Goswami's commentary. "When received by Pantra Trika initiation in a Vaishnava Sampradaya, Vishnu mantras deliver the chanter from illusion and provide him liberation and entrance into the divine life of devotional service. But the highest standard of pure love of God is obtainable not by the Pantra Trika Vidhi, but by the Bhagavad Marg of Nam Sankirtan, worship of Krishna's names without material motives." The Prajitoshta Brahman had been chanting the 10-syllable Gopal mantra for some time with good effect, but only after he heard the Shuddha Nam from Gopakumar was he able to chant the same names of Lord Gopal in the perfect consciousness of Sankirtan. Offenseless Sankirtan with concentrated attention naturally develops into spontaneous attraction to Krishna and his loving service. Although even Namabhas chanting, characterized by a genuine effort to give up offenses, will help us advance quickly in Krishna consciousness, only chanting the holy name purely will yield the fruit of pure love of God. So that is important to bear in mind throughout our various services and activities, these powerful activities that we have the privilege to be engaged in on a daily basis. Thank you again very much for your time and compassion upon me. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
That's 11. Prabhupada said